It's time for the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. To be a part of the show, give us a call at 321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
We have a lot to get to today. Welcome into the show. Painter Sharpless here with you. A number of things going on. Gus Malzahn takes the podium today, as he does every Tuesday, I guess I say every Tuesday. Every Tuesday during football season, that is, and when the Tigers aren't off. They're back on, in case you haven't heard. They're taking on Georgia at Jordan-Hare Stadium. So we will talk all about that. We will get you caught up on what Gus says ahead of the Georgia game. Some injury updates, if any, are needed. Kirby Smart met with media members yesterday, I believe, and we'll have some audio later on that. We'll talk to Justin. We'll talk to Greg Peterson at 12:05. A couple things to also note. Auburn, of course, Auburn basketball has South Alabama this week, or tonight, actually, and they'll try to continue what has been a nice start to the season. I think there's obviously a lot of reason for optimism at this point in the year, and this is a very athletic Auburn basketball team that will be going up against the most experienced team in the country in South Alabama. I expect it to be a sellout crowd tonight. It's going to be a fun one. Should be some Auburn fans, but South Alabama are going to come out. Michael Pappas in studio with me today. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Painter. How are you?
I'm good, man. What do you think about Cam Newton and Ian Rappaport, NFL insider, saying what's sort of been out there for a few weeks? I think Mariota is another name that's been linked to the Chicago Bears. It's clear Mitch Trubisky is just not going to work out. And, man, that draft pick just doesn't look good when you consider some of the other quarterbacks that they took over, or they took, you know, Trubisky before they took him, most notably Mahomes and Watson. Lamar Jackson has looked fantastic. But all that aside, your thoughts on Cam Newton? It appears he's open, and according to sources, if it all works out, he would be willing to go to Chicago.
I don't know why he wouldn't be willing to go to Chicago. I mean, they've got some crazy talented running backs.
It's a good roster.
Yeah. I mean, they've got one of the best defenses in the NFL. I'm honestly not convinced that Trubisky's the issue. It seems like it might be a Matt Nagy problem because, you know, last season, Trubisky played very well, and Matt Nagy was the Mad Hatter calling plays. He was coach of the year. They won 12-4, and this season, it's obvious they don't trust Mitch to throw the ball down the field. They don't run the ball. He'll drop back and throw the ball 50 times in a game, and they don't trust him to throw it past like 12 yards down the field. And it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of a bummer. I don't know.
There were a lot of hopes for this team that you know, were it not for close to home here, Cody Parkey's double doink. That they might be finding themselves in a Super Bowl. Like, I don't know. Yeah. You don't know what's going to happen in the next round. But, that was a talented team. Your thoughts on your Browns, who took down the Bills and the draft, Josh Allen?
You know what, man?
I think they were in desperation mode. I was not surprised the Browns were slight favorites. It looked like the Bills were going to pull it out, but that forward pass was it was the right call.
Yeah.
It was the right call. It was technically, I mean, it was a forward pass, but they got bailed out on that one. Then bailed out on the missed kick. Bills, this is just like good. Two bad teams that love to find weird ways to lose.
The Bills aren't bad, though. I mean,
their defense is excellent. Their offense is, it leaves something to be desired.
This was pretty standard for the Browns season so far. You know, the defense is finally mostly healthy, and they played very well. I mean, Myles Garrett is just a beast on defense, and it's just coaching malpractice right now from Freddie Kitchens. And even in this game, it was like they won despite their head coach. It was wild. How about how he called a timeout with 3 seconds left in the third quarter?
There was a lot of, for someone that makes lots of money to do that job well, there's no way he's back next year, but
See, here's the thing, though. The Browns have the easiest schedule in the league the rest of the season. So it is not out of the realm of possibility that they go on a run here and, get this, win the division.
Yeah.
Like, they beat the Ravens in Baltimore. They have three wins on the year. They beat the Ravens in Baltimore, and now they beat the Bills at home. I mean, those are two great wins. Right? I mean, the Bills are...
The Bills, as much as I want to call it a great win, it's a fine win. I mean...
They're, what, 6-3 now?
Yeah, they've had an easy schedule to this point, and I think that they'll finish...
I guess we'll see how it ages also, yeah, but...
I think they'll finish near the top. I mean, like, because their division's terrible, so, like, they're going to finish ahead of the Jets and the Dolphins.
I guess they have a little bit of an inflated record because they play the Dolphins and the Jets twice. Each.
But, I think that they can get to 9, maybe 10 wins.
Yeah.
And, like, so a win over a team that's fighting
probably
for a wild card spot, like, it's not – for the Browns right now, they just needed something. I mean, that felt to me like they were a little bit starved for any kind of victory, even if it was ugly. We'll talk to Justin Ferguson in just a little bit. Gus Malzahn will hit the podium in about 10 minutes. Michael Pappas is with me. I want to remind you, this week we're getting back at it with After the Game. Michael Pappas – 50% of that, Dan Peck, the other half. You can hear that live on ESPN 106.7 Saturday. That, of course, is live from Skybar Cafe. Your thoughts on Auburn and Georgia, Michael? Just lay them on me. I'm not going to direct you. I'm not going to guide you anywhere. Where do we start, or where we start will just depend on what it is you want to talk about. What is it about this game that makes you tingle just a little bit?
I'm fascinated to see what Kevin Steele does, because no one really in this Georgia receiving core scares you that much. Not to say that they're not talented. I mean, we saw what George Pickens did last week.
The athletes are excellent, right?
Yeah.
But they have not been able to put it together.
Yeah, it's like, I haven't watched Georgia enough this season to be like, oh, the problem is they can't get open, or the problem is they're not schemed open. Like, I don't know what the problem is. But no one in that receiving corps really terrifies you. So it's, if you're Kevin Steele, do you just sell out to stop the run and be like, Jake Fromm beat me? Or
well, he has done that. I mean, like, he's capable of making throws where, especially Auburn fans saw that back shoulder throw in the SEC championship a number of times, where if it's put in the right place, there's only so much the defensive backs can do. And I look forward to hearing the call from Shadow next week about the way that the defensive backs are defending the wide receivers if they do go to that play a number of times, and I won't be surprised if they will. They've had success with it. But, yeah, I get your point. It's like they've got guys who can make plays, who will be physical, and some of the best athletes Auburn has seen at the wide receiver position this year, but they have not statistically been able to consistently gain yards through the air. And I do wonder, just like some other teams, where if Auburn is able to make you one-dimensional, good luck. Because if you cannot keep Auburn in somewhat of a balanced on their toes defensively, you're not going to have much luck. And running the ball against this defensive line, as good as Swift is, and the offensive line matchup, Georgia has not looked as good as we thought that they would be, some at offensive line anyway. But again, still very talented players at that unit, so it should be, I think, a good test. I think this will be a good matchup between a very good Auburn line and what is still a talented Georgia offensive line.
A very talented Georgia offensive line. But we saw, just in the South Carolina game, they had a ton of trouble with Javon Kinlaw, who is, I believe, the second-rated defensive tackle on most draft boards behind Derrick Brown. And so, obviously, it's never a slam dunk. Hopefully, for Georgia, they learned something from that game, and they can adjust playing against another elite defensive tackle like Derrick Brown, and they'll, figure some things out. But, if they have trouble with Derrick Brown and Auburn makes them horribly one-dimensional, maybe your opinion differs from mine on this, but I don't trust Jake Fromm at all to go win me a football game.
I trust Jake Fromm, and he's had he's had moments where he has been able to take them down the field. You can score in big plays or sustained drives. I'm not worried about his leadership or his ability to lead a big drive. Now, how much of it do you chalk to Alabama making good adjustments, like going all the way back to that freshman year national title game for him, where they played a good first half, had a sizable, two score lead, and then obviously we know the rest, but like, what makes you think that you're not, like, if they need 6 points, if it's a four more and it's the end of the game, like, what makes you think Fromm can't get it done? I think it's fair to say Auburn's defense just won't let him get it, like that they'll be better, but I'm not sure that I'm going to say that that's all on Fromm, that he's just incapable of leading a team in crunch time.
Yeah, I guess what I mean is, like, not necessarily that fourth quarter drive. I think he's definitely capable of that. It's more of, like, over the course of a game, if they can't run the ball, or if Auburn is consistently getting pressure on Jake Fromm and he's getting hit a lot, or, you know, just stuff like that, especially if they can't run the ball, I'm not convinced that Jake Fromm can go out and play well enough and put the team on his back and go win a football game. I think Jake Fromm is more of the quarterback who, you know, if you put all the pieces around him, he can go out and not lose you a football game and play a very efficient football game, have a great day, mm-hmm. go 17 of 23 for 280 yards.
I think you're,
and two
you're,
touchdowns.
You're tapping into something, though, that, like, is a debate amongst Georgia fans and others right now. It's like you had this great quarterback who's gotten you to multiple SEC championship games. He's gotten you into a playoff. And it's like, but was the ceiling higher with Justin Fields? Is that guy capable of simply doing some things athletically that Jake Fromm can't, for all of Fromm's strengths? There's just some things Fields can do athletically that I think most can't, with the exception mm-hmm. of, they're so good offensively right now. And, like, we could talk about Tua and Trevor Lawrence and how good athletes they are and their own strengths. But yeah, I get the point of, like, you rely on Fromm and he's probably not going to make any critical errors. I think he's much more than just a game manager. I think he's much more than that. But I hear you. Like, I'm not necessarily worried about him having this moment where it's like, I have to take over.
Also, if he does make mistakes, usually they're like bad, bad mistakes. I mean, look at what happened against South Carolina. He made a couple of mistakes in that game that were just, I mean, were backbreakers.
And he's basically had one game like that every year.
Yeah.
His freshman year was the Auburn game. Last year, partially, it was that LSU game.
Yep.
And then this year. So, you know, and just like anything, there are other plays and other players who contributed. But you're right. It does seem like he's had a game a year in which he was just a little off. Join the conversation now. 321-1390 Auburn, Georgia. What's on your mind? Auburn hoops tonight down in South Alabama. We're looking forward to talking to Justin Ferguson later on. We'll get his thoughts and some updates from Gus Malzahn's press conference. That begins in about 3 minutes at 11:15. We're talking all things Auburn football and basketball. A little bit of NFL, too. What a game last night. Did you watch the Seahawks and the 49ers, who are no longer undefeated, Michael?
I did. I feel bad for the 49ers.
What a game.
Awesome game.
I guess you have some ties loosely to the 49ers. You wouldn't call yourself a fan.
Well, so, I mean, my dad is from San Francisco, huge 49ers fan, huge San Francisco sports fan. So he is. And so growing up, those were really the teams that I rooted for. Now I'm not as big of a fan, but my tie to the San Francisco sports teams is, if my team does not make the playoffs and a San Francisco sports team does, I jump onto that bandwagon so hard. And then if someone questions me about it, I'm like, whoa, it's my dad's favorite team. And everyone's like, damn.
That was one of the better games, if not the best game I've watched this season. It was a fun one for a Monday night game. What were your thoughts overall? Russell Wilson there, I thought he was going to float that one right into the end zone. And from the angle on TV, it looked decent. And it was an interception, so it felt like they had lost the game. And what a terrible, terrible kick attempt.
Dude, you just feel bad for that. I mean, you feel bad for the 49ers because it's like the one game their kicker's out. They bring in this rookie who's never kicked a game before.
I thought that he got laces, but on the replay, just was a bad kick.
And they showed right before it that he'd never taken a kick in overtime. College or in the NFL, because he, you know, this was his first game, but he nailed whatever it was, the two or three field goals before that, you know, everyone's sitting on pins and needles for those. And then this last one was kind of like, oh, he was so good on the last two, he'll hit this one. And it that was an all-time shank. You're right. And he, like, you feel bad for him. You feel bad for the 49ers. But I guess it's one of those things where it's like, that was such a fluky game. Both teams scored defensive touchdowns. It looks like Seattle's going to go in and score a touchdown right before the half, and DK Metcalf fumbles literally going into the end zone. It was just a wild, wild game. Wild game. The 49ers defense got me 19 points in fantasy, though, so shout out to them.
3-2-1-13-90. Let us know also, what do you think the chances are that Auburn pulls a 2017 November and takes the sweep of their rivals, Georgia and Alabama? Is it possible they do both? Are they going to go 8-4, assuming that Samford does not somehow sneak a dub on the Tigers? I think a lot of Auburn fans, Michael, assume that the Georgia game will be the best chance for a victory in the month of November against a big rival. But Auburn fans seemingly a little more confident after watching that LSU-Alabama game. In particular, I think, confident in their defense.
Definitely. Absolutely. I mean, I don't know how you could be more confident in this Auburn defense. They've shown game in and game out that they are one of the best units in the country. I feel better going into these two games than I did in 2017. I can tell you that much. And maybe that's because I'm, you know, I guess in a position where I'm closer to the Auburn football team right
now.
In a sense that, you know, my life is kind of encapsulated by it. You know,
in 17, you hadn't seen a team beat Alabama and Georgia since the run in 13. And so now I think there's at least something for Auburn fans to point to that says, outside of two of the greatest, most historic plays in program and college football history, there was some success. And beating Georgia the way that they did, and then beating Alabama by double digits, it was not just that they won the rivalry for the first time in a few years. It was how good they looked doing it. So I think for like Auburn fans generally feel pessimistic about the month of November because under Gus Malzahn, with the exception of those 2 years, November has been the breaking point for the team.
Yep. And, you know, Gus Malzahn's always got the team in it heading into November.
Yes.
Right?
I mean, and it's not their fault that they've got these two really tough teams in the month, but like Auburn fans are tired of hearing that also.
Yep.
You got to beat rivals more. And then, so, but to your point, outside of 15, every year going into November, this has been a team where it's like if they win those games, they will make some noise down the stretch. And I don't think it's going to be enough for them to make the playoffs. They would need a lot of chaos. How do you feel about that Florida-Missouri game, by the way? Missouri has gotten the best of the Gators the last couple seasons. They've had an up-and-down year. They didn't look good against Georgia.
Kelly Bryant dressed, I guess, worked out, warmed up, didn't play.
Right.
And so that's tough to really judge that game. The defense actually looked pretty good, held Georgia to two touchdowns.
Statistically, they've been a good defense.
Yeah, their best linebacker got injured. He, like, tore his pec or something. And so he's out for the season. But, I mean, holding that Georgia offense to two touchdowns and three field goals is nothing to really scoff at, or whatever it was. I don't think Missouri can beat them. If Kelly Bryant plays, they've got a shot, but I don't feel super confident about it.
And it's one I would expect Florida to have circled, because that's probably a team that...
And Florida had a... Oh, they didn't. They played Vanderbilt, so they kind of had a bye.
In a way, yes, more or less. Josh Dubb, our friend here, friend of the program, he's at @Josh_Dubb on Twitter. Since Gus Malzahn took over in 2013, Auburn 19-15 in one-score games. That is the 39th highest percentage in the FBS. In the same duration, 51% of Auburn's losses have been by a single-score margin. That would be 16th highest in the FBS. Does that stat mean much to you? One of the things, he compiles some cool stats. He also puts a disclaimer out there and says some of these are meaningless. I just think they're cool.
Sorry, I got lost in the numbers there.
19-15 in one-score games as Gus Malzahn. And 51% of Auburn's losses have been by a single score margin.
Yeah.
Basically saying a lot of Auburn's losses have been close.
Yeah, they don't get, which, I don't know, we kind of know, but it's, yeah, I don't know how telling that is. I mean, it tells you that you're right there in every game. You're in a lot of cases one play away. And
Auburn fans want to get that play, though.
Yeah,
they want, especially against the games in November. It feels like those have been, and you know, you can probably throw LSU into that too at this point. Like, yep. It's not like Georgia has really gotten the best of Auburn since in the last 15 years, but it is starting to feel that way to a degree with LSU, because you can't win in Death Valley. And they're at least winning occasionally when they come to Jordan-Hare Stadium. 3-2-1-13-90, Gus Malzahn taking the podium. We'll talk about that when we come back. Michael Pappas is with me. Michael Pappas, of course, the beautiful man.
The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
Gus Malzahn speaking to beat reporters like Justin Ferguson and Josh Vitale, Tom Green and company, sweet, sweet Mark Murphy, and more. We love Mark Murphy. If you miss any of the show, remember that podcasts for the Lunch Break are presented by University Ace Hardware. They're available on ESPNAU.com, in the Podcast Center, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. University Ace is your Auburn helpful place, located next to the movie theater in Auburn. Michael, you've known I wanted to get on the bingo trivia circuit. I have done that. I have trained very hard over the last few weeks.
Ooh.
Last night at a local pub, I hosted trivia for the first time. Apparently, I was too quiet. I was too soft-spoken. I've got to be louder, project more into the microphone. Do you believe that part about the soft-spoken, too quiet thing?
Yes.
People in the back were like, hey, man. We're straining to hear the questions, making this game much harder than it needs to be.
I do want to know, though, what were some of the questions?
Some interesting questions.
Do you make up the questions?
I have them sent to me.
Oh.
Because I'm a big deal. There were different rounds. We had an animal round. We had a computer round. We had a sports round. I would have struggled in the computer round, which surprised me. I would have struggled in the animal round. And maybe even the sports round. It would have been a rough night of trivia for me if I wasn't calling them out.
Can you run a question by me? Give me a sports question.
Yes.
Do you remember one?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. In 1977, at 34 years old, he became the youngest inductee into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What is his name,
Michael? In 1977?
Yes. At 34 years young.
At 34.
Youngest player ever inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Who is he? What is his name?
Roger Staubach.
No.
All right, I give up.
Gale Sayers.
Dang. Was I close?
I don't know. Somebody call in with that knowledge. 3-2-1-13-90. Justin Ferguson is out today because he is covering Gus Malzahn's press conference. So we will talk about that. And we will also talk to our good friend Greg Peterson, because he's going to have all those obscure basketball games for you, and we'll talk about that Auburn-South Alabama matchup. Gus Malzahn on Georgia says, quote, "We're really looking forward to playing these guys. Our coaches and our players are extremely excited." He also adds that it all starts with Jake Fromm. He's one of the better players at any position in college football. I would agree with that. Also, Malzahn said on the Georgia matchup, "I think a good thing for us is that we've played three top 10 teams, so it's not going to be a shock as far as that goes." You know, I think that's a good point. It did look to me, and I think the commentators, I think Brad Nessler and Gary brought this up, that Alabama had just kind of steamrolled most of their opponents. Not to say that they had played flawlessly throughout the year, but they never had a team that really challenged them. And it did look like in the first couple of drives, there was an adjustment for Alabama in the speed of the game, the intensity, a little bit of nerves almost, because it felt like for the first time they were playing in a game in which there was some doubt about if they could win. And that's something Auburn doesn't have. Well, one, because they've lost a couple times, but two, they've managed to win some close games.
I definitely agree with you, and I agree with them if they were saying that. Alabama was in a position where they hadn't been punched in the mouth. I know we talked about this on the Locked On Auburn podcast the other day, but in the first half, Alabama didn't look like a well-coached football team, which is something that I'm shocked that I'm saying about the Alabama Crimson Tide with Nick Saban as the head coach. I mean, they were making uncharacteristic mistakes. Obviously, the Tua fumble on the first drive is just kind of unlucky, but like 12 men on the field, jumping off sides, false starting.
Yeah, those two plays were critical because it feels like Alabama's going to go down and score immediately, setting the tone, giving them some momentum, and instead you give the ball to LSU inside their 10. You're about to score, and then, you negate. They scored a few plays later, if I remember correctly, after they had that interception taken back because of what you said, having a 12th man being a little disorganized. It was an uncharacteristic game, I think, by Alabama's standard in terms of discipline. And I think it matters that they just had not truly had a nail-biting game in which they were challenged like this. It's been since their loss to Clemson where they've had a moment like that.
Yeah.
So to Gus's point, and Georgia is battle-tested to some extent too. You know, that I don't think Notre Dame is a fantastic team, but they're a good team. We could talk all day about just how good, but that was a close game that Georgia managed to ice. They lost one to South Carolina. You know, they won a pretty close game against Florida. So they've been tested, too, more so, I think, than Alabama has.
I definitely agree with that. They lost a game, like you said, and they've played other teams that are, you know, rival their skill level, I guess is the best way to put it. With Florida, with Notre Dame, I mean, with these teams that, I mean, even South Carolina, who beat them, like, they have been able, they've had teams show up and punch them in the mouth and make Georgia be like, whoa, this is going to be competitive. We are going to have to find a way to win this football game. And to their credit, they've done it. And I anticipate this game in Jordan-Hare being a fight.
Gus Malzahn adds, we're expecting them to blitz. He says that Georgia's defense has been pressuring more this season. So Auburn and that offensive line, I guess, will need to be prepared. Is Auburn going to be able to run the ball in this game?
I think so. I do. I mean, with the bevel of running backs that Auburn has and wide receivers and guys they can get the ball
great
to in
space.
Great word choice,
by the way. Thanks, I like that. Yeah. No, I'm not.
Vocab word. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a bonus point if I'm keeping track in trivia.
They'll find a way. I mean, they know how important it is. We're at home. They'll have the crowd behind him. I think if one running back's not working, they'll throw another guy in there. I don't anticipate this being a game where Bo Nix is, you know, dropping back to pass 45 times. Not that I don't think that's happened, but still, I mean,
I hear you.
They'll figure it out. They'll find a way, and they've had 2 weeks, right?
So, interesting note here, Gus Malzahn says Auburn hasn't talked about what they did in 2017. I just referenced that a moment ago, that amongst the fan base anyway, there is at least, I think, a sentiment that they've seen the team do this. In 17, that moment had not happened. They won in Gus's first year in dramatic fashion in both games. And then in 17, they just looked like the better team against their rivals in both games. But Josh is saying Malzahn said Auburn hasn't talked about what they did in 2017 when they swept Georgia and Alabama. Also, however, it doesn't have to, as a lot of guys were on the team at the time.
Yeah, and if you're one of those guys, if you're a senior or a junior on this team, I mean, you're telling all these sophomores and freshmen, like, there's nothing to be afraid of. This is not like the big bad Georgia Bulldogs coming in. This is a team that, you know, Derek Brown, Marlon Davidson played a big part in, like, just beating down this Georgia team.
Yeah, it does feel like with teams like Georgia and Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson, especially I think Clemson, Ohio State, and Alabama at this point, a lot of teams are, it seems, mentally defeated.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, they just don't have much of an expectation that they'll be able to keep up for four quarters. And I certainly don't think that that is anything that's going to infect Auburn's locker room in the matchup this Saturday. We'll talk more about that. Gus Malzahn at the podium. We'll have audio later. Greg Peterson joins us at the top of hour two. We'll talk Auburn hoops and college hoops with him as the Tigers take on South Alabama, a very experienced basketball team this evening. 321-1390. Give us a call, and you can tweet at us at ESPN1067. We'd love to hear from you. More Lunch Break straight ahead.
You're on the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
As we progress through this Tuesday's show, Auburn takes on South Alabama tonight. Gus Malzahn finishing up at the podium. We will keep you up to date on anything coming out of his weekly press conference. Michael Pappas in with me. Justin Ferguson with Gus Malzahn at the moment. I've got some Kirby Smart audio I want to play for you We'll talk about what he has to say. Also, I am curious to see what Georgia tries to do against this Auburn defense, because there are some similarities between these two teams, Michael. Really great defenses, some of the best in the country, and offenses with talent, but statistically and in some big games and some big moments have not been able to get it done. The offenses have sputtered at big times for both of these teams.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And for Georgia, that's mostly on the offensive coordinator. New this year, the old guy went to Tennessee. The offensive coordinator is new this year, and you know Georgia fans aren't thrilled with him right now. They're expecting to have a more dynamic offense with a junior quarterback and one of the best running backs in the SEC.
Well, and it's got to be frustrating watching what Fields is doing on top of it. You know, I mean, because like Fromm, I can understand the decision to stick with Fromm. All he did was get you to multiple conference championship games and a national title game.
That's all.
So it's, you know, I get it as a coach why you stay with that. But also they have looked stagnant at times, and that is the opposite of what Ohio State has looked like. Let's go to Shadow as we continue this conversation. 321-1390. Shadow, how are you on a very cold Tuesday morning?
Well, Shadow's doing great.
Good.
I want to continue something that I heard someone talking about yesterday.
Yes, sir.
And they said this, and I want to get y'all's reaction.
Okay.
They said that if Gus Malzahn goes to Arkansas, that he will make the changes in his offense, and Arkansas will be unprecedented in what they accomplish, because Gus Malzahn, because of Auburn, because of the Pat Dye good old boy network down there, that he will not, he has not been able to make the changes at Auburn, and he will be able to make those changes at Arkansas. What's your opinion?
Can you give me some examples, Shadow, of what it is you're referring to that he can't do now that he'll be able to do at Arkansas?
Making the necessary changes in his offense, just like Alabama, just like Florida, just like LSU, that Auburn is continuing to live in the Stone Age, in the past, and they have not come up to modern day football in their schemes, in the way that they run their offenses, and that's just some of it. How much time do you have?
I've got plenty of time. Who is it that's holding him back, Shadow?
Oh my God! How long have you been watching Auburn football?
Since I was a little guy.
Well, then how in the world could you say that?
I don't know, Shadow.
So your answer, I guess, is the administration?
Listen, it's more than the administration. It's the good old Yellowwood production line. It's certain people up there, just like the political scenario with the deep state. I brought that up last week.
Yes,
I keep bringing up these things that are true. You see, when you see something on the field happening before your very eyes, is it a conspiracy?
I don't know. But I will say this. You know, I think there's an idea about what he can achieve at Arkansas, Shadow, that would probably keep Arkansas fans happy. I don't know about the offensive adjustment things. I'm having a hard time on that one. But I do think that Coach Malzahn is capable of getting Arkansas back into a place where they're winning 6 to 9 games a year, maybe every few seasons a little bit better. Right now, they're an absolute mess.
Okay, well, you just said the same thing about Auburn, right? Isn't that what you just said?
I'm not sure. What did I just say, Shadow?
Well, you said 6 to 9 wins, and Auburn has averaged about 6 to 7 to 8 wins for, you know, if you take out the 17, I believe it was 17, that Auburn has averaged 5 losses a year. I mean, guys, you just said the same thing about Auburn, but I guess you're content with 7 or 8 wins at Auburn. But, I just don't think that a lot of the fan base is going to be happy with that. I've been saying this for years, and do you see something changing? Is the record changing? Are the results on the field changing? We've had 11 offensive coordinators, and we're still running up the middle. We're still running the same plays. I mean, I heard somebody talking yesterday. As a matter of fact, it was my good friend Charlie Trotman talking about bringing in a freaking another offensive coordinator with Gus Malzahn's promise that he's going to make changes in the offense when he's not going to do it. I mean, how long, guys? Tell me how long it's got to continue. I mean, you guys aren't even in the mode that you want to see a change yourself. I don't hear it in the voice. I don't hear it in your talking. I don't hear it in what you're saying. You're perfectly fine just to announce on this radio show. You don't have a whole lot of passion to me, which makes me question whether you're really an Auburn fan.
Fair enough, Shadow. I do think it's clear that at Arkansas he would have a much lower ceiling, and the expectations would be lower, and he's not likely to compete for SEC championships in a scenario where he might go off and take the job at Arkansas. Don't know if that will happen. I think the Georgia game will be very telling. If you win against Georgia, certainly, I think it changes the entire complexion of the season. If you're able to win against both of your rivals and you get 10 wins, certainly, I think all of that conversation goes away. Thanks for the call, Shadow. I appreciate your input. Michael, we got John on the line. Was there something you wanted to add there?
No.
Okay, we'll go to John now. 321-1390. John, what's up, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you giving us a shout.
Just a quick question. I just wonder, why? I mean, we're a fairly top tier program. Just wondering why we don't have a top tier offensive coordinator. Alabama's got the former head coach of USC, mm-hmm. and we've got, And another thing is, I heard a rumor. I don't know if you guys can tell me if it's true or not, but I heard that Malzahn wanted to hire Hugh Freeze, and the university told him no.
So, first things first, Alabama does not have the former head coach at USC. Alabama has the former alcoholic, disgraced head coach at USC. I mean, the guy went through a whole bunch to get ousted from that USC job, if you remember that.
I think John makes a good point also that since then he has done a nice job of revitalizing his career. Falcons fans were on Sark's case, but they had statistically some fine numbers, and with this great talent he's had at Alabama, the offense has still continued to look good. I hear John's point. I get what you're saying, too.
I know, but there's some it's not like the guy got fired at SC and then immediately came to Alabama and was the offensive coordinator. There was a lot that happened both at SC to kind of destroy the guy's whole life, sure. And then he spent a while building it back up.
And also a counterpoint, John, Coach Malzahn has bet on himself. He is the primary play caller.
He was brought in to run his offense. That's why they don't have a top-tier offensive coordinator, because a top-tier offensive coordinator doesn't want to come in and run someone else's offense.
John?
Right. I hear you. But did you hear anything about I think everybody needs some redemption, and I don't see why. Did you hear anything about the Hugh Freeze? I mean, as I had said earlier, that I thought that I heard somewhere, read somewhere, that he was wanting to bring Hugh Freeze in. And I guess I can't remember how many years it's been since, kind of a similar situation that Hugh Freeze had to leave disgrace from Ole Miss. But, maybe recycling some of these guys that showed promise.
Well, that is an interesting point. That was a talking point at one point. They were close friends, and he could probably bring in a different perspective. The head coaching job at Liberty, it definitely seems like he's poised for a comeback for a job at a Power 5 school soon. I think there are probably a number of competing factors as to why that didn't work out, John, but I can understand why it was an attractive thought and why it could have possibly worked as Freeze and Malzahn are friends.
That was also a little tricky because there was the personal stuff, obviously, but he also left amid a huge NCAA investigation that Ole Miss either sanctioned themselves or got sanctioned by the NCAA. So that one, I think, is a little – if the university stepped in and was you can't hire him, I'm betting that it was more because of the NCAA issues and less because of the prostitutes.
And I think also, like, he's going to get a chance. He's a good enough coach, to John's point. Like, he will get another opportunity, a good school.
Yeah,
and we'll move on. It'll have been a few years. And that's one of my problems with the NCAA, among the many that you could list, is that coaches are sometimes able to move from a program. That program suffers the consequences. And, you know, we've seen this with Coach Cal at times, too. He has been able to get out of town ahead of schedule, go to a different program, and then that program has to deal with what he left. John, is there anything else you want to add?
No, that's all I had, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks for your call, John. We appreciate it. 321-1390 at ESPN 106.7 is where you can follow along on Twitter. We'll get into our final break here of Hour 1. Greg Peterson joins us for Hour 2. There's a number of ways you can stay tuned to ESPN 106.7. Of course, you can do so on the dial locally or from anywhere at ESPNAU.com and our award-winning ESPN 106.7 app.
Follow the Lunch Break on Twitter at Lunch Break ESPN.
Join the AHS Report with Coach Adam Weingarten Monday and Wednesday. You can hear the AHS Report tomorrow at 6 right here on ESPN 106.7 as the Tigers get geared up for round two of the playoffs against McGill Tulane. We'll have that for you. 6:30 coverage beginning Friday on Wings 94.3. Kickoff at 7. Let's go to Daniel, who's on the phone patiently waiting. Daniel, what's up, man? Thanks for holding.
Hey, no problem. So Justin Ferguson, your own, just tweeted something out.
Yes.
It says, big takeaway. You may have already covered this. I don't know. Big takeaway, Auburn head coach Gus Malzahn press conference. Tigers are really, really, really going to be or find a way to emphasize being able to run the ball against Georgia's elite defense. You know, I've always been a Gus supporter. I'm an Auburn supporter. I've defended him over and over.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that feels more stubborn than strategic. It's a little frustrating because Georgia, the strength of Georgia is their running, their run defense. They've shown that they have holes. And one of the criticisms people keep lobbing at Malzahn is, he's just stubborn. He's going to do what he's going to do. He doesn't adjust. Let me give you a counter to that. Kevin Steele goes down to LSU with a three-man rush, you know, three-man front line anyway, puts Joe Burrow in a tough spot, and we almost pull it off. I don't know. I feel less optimistic about Saturday. I was relatively optimistic, but I see that as a formula for lots of three and outs. What do you guys think?
I think that that's not a totally wrong way of thinking about it. This offense with Coach Malzahn will always be a run-first team. They want to be able to run the ball. The best teams in 10, 13, 14, and 17 were all effective at running the football and then opening up the passing game. I know in the modern era, you're looking more at some teams anyway who pass to run the ball. That's not his philosophy. I can understand the concern, though, Daniel, that, look, are you going to try to force something that's perhaps a strength of Georgia's, which has been slowing down teams' ability to run the ball? I think you feel good if there's somewhat of a, you know, I'm curious to see how they split up these carries against Georgia. DJ Williams' emergence certainly helps Auburn a lot. But it just doesn't surprise me, Daniel. I can appreciate where you're coming from, but I feel like we get that a lot from him because it's always the case. So this doesn't seem all that different to me, but I can appreciate your frustration.
Well, and it's not that, I mean, obviously you're going to do some running attempts. I didn't get to hear the press conference, so maybe it'll be different. I want Auburn to run the ball. We've got talent. Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, but I guess the way it sounded was Gus Malzahn doubling down. Well, you know, no matter what Georgia does, we're going to run the ball. It just feels like not giving Bo Nix the opportunity to get into an offensive rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, running power draws or, you know, off tackle constantly, that kind of thing. But we'll see. We'll see how it plays. I agree with you. I want Auburn to run the ball. We should. That's who we are. He can't change his offensive identity. But
I get your concern, though, Daniel. I do. That it's like, are you going to be so stubborn that you almost make yourself one-dimensional, which is a fear Auburn fans might have for good reason.
Well, and how many offensive possessions are you going to get that we have that opportunity? Both defenses, I think, are going to be stout, so offensive possessions are going to be precious.
But, and to that
anyway,
point,
okay,
Daniel,
thank you guys.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much, Daniel, as always. I'll say, too, I'll be curious to see how Bo looks when they do give him opportunities to throw the ball, because they did that against Florida and LSU, and for a number of reasons, he didn't look great. He missed, especially in the LSU game. I thought some throws that he's more than capable of making might have been the time in the game, might have been the crowd, might have been a number of factors. But I can understand that wanting to take some of this game out of Bo Nix's hands, especially early. And if he does settle into a rhythm, if the run game can get going, then Auburn's got a really great chance. I think in both of these games, if Auburn can get to 30, it's likely that they can win. Because against Georgia, it's just going to be tough to get to 30 against that defense. And then against Alabama, you know, holding them to less than 30 points, a lot like LSU, and you getting to 30, I think, if they had done that against LSU, it would have been a win. So optimistic, I think a lot of Auburn fans are concerned, though. This does feel like one of the biggest games for Gus Malzahn and what the narrative will be moving into the offseason, especially as we kind of monitor Chad Morris in that Arkansas position. I'm fascinated to see how all that unfolds. And Daniel, we appreciate the call. 321-1390. Remember that podcasts of The Lunch Breaker presented by University Ace Hardware. They're available at ESPNAU.com, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. We're in the Key of Auburn studio wrapping up Hour 1. Greg Peterson will join us in just more than 5 minutes. We will talk with him about this Auburn basketball game tonight and some other games around the country this evening. Michael, we'll have What's on the Night in Hour 2. Can you give us a sneak peek of what you've got? I know you've got it prepared. We ran just a little short on time, so we're going to bump that to Hour 2.
Yeah, we got NBA, NCAA football, NCAA basketball, NHL. I mean, this is almost...
It's a good time of the year.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great time of the year. This is almost sports equinox-esque. We got four sports tonight. We've got some great movies. HGTV, House Hunters International. It's in Quito, Ecuador.
Okay. That seems to happen when you're on a lot. It seems like we go to Ecuador when you're filling in for Justin on Tuesdays in particular.
I got a question for you, though.
Lay it on me.
So Derek Brown said that Jake Fromm's little brother, Auburn tight end Tyler Fromm, does not help the defense with tips on how to defend his brother. I mean,
I bet they don't talk about it. Like, my guess is they don't talk about it. Because there have been other brothers in this relationship that at least have said... or in this rivalry and with other teams that they talk throughout the year, they encourage one another, they let each other know what they saw against other opponents. But when it's the week of the game, they either don't talk at all or they stay away from football, which I think seems fair, but yeah, I get it.
Come on.
I get it.
Tyler's got to have some insight.
A little intel?
Oh, ever since he was in college, he struggled throwing to his left, or he struggles when you pressure him on second down. It's like, nothing?
I hear you.
Nothing?
Dude. I hear you.
No help?
That's Hour 1. Greg Peterson joins us in Hour 2. We've got some audio from Gus and Kirby we'll play for you. We'll talk hoops, college football, and more. Taking your calls. Thanks, Shadow, John, Daniel. Join the conversation at ESPN 106.7 or right here in the Kia of Auburn studio by calling 321-1390. Michael Pappas in with me. You can hear the Auburn High report, the AHS report, Wednesday. That's tomorrow at 6. More ESPN 106.7 after this.
W294 AR Auburn, WGCC HD3 Waverly, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7, a broadcast service of Auburn Network Incorporated.
Hour number two underway here. Greg Peterson joining us. Follow him on Twitter at GUnit_81. He is excellent. One of our favorites here on the show and great for college basketball insight. Greg, thanks for joining us again. How are you?
Gentlemen, always a pleasure. I'm doing great. How about you?
Cannot complain one bit. Excited to have you back on. Auburn, South Alabama tonight. What do you think about this matchup? A very experienced South Alabama team, an Auburn team that has started the season nicely, very athletic. How do you see this one unfolding, Greg?
I think this is going to be a little bit of a closer one than many people would indicate, because with South Alabama, they're a team that I have very highly rated out in the Sun Belt. You mentioned it with them, very experienced. They bring in a guy by the name of Josh Ajayi. This is a gentleman that last year shot right around 36.5% from three. Has some great versatility, and on top of that, He's able to give the team nearly a double-double on any given night. You've got Mitchell, who's able to shoot some threes for this team as well. By and large, you take a look at the South Alabama team, their hallmark is pretty much everyone on the floor is able to shoot some threes, which I think is going to be interesting because typically with Auburn, that is the team that you're looking at that is able to have all that stretchability. Now Auburn seems to have a little bit more of a post presence with Austin Wiley being in there and Anfernee McLemore really being a little bit more of a post presence. So I think that this is going to be a very interesting blend in this game.
I'm with you. I think that the experience of South Alabama makes this an intriguing matchup. Auburn played another experienced team last Friday against Davidson and came out nicely in this one. I think it'll also be a good environment. South Alabama going to bring a lot of fans out. It'll be a good one. Tell me what you think, if you would, Greg, about this Missouri-Xavier matchup. Xavier just outside the top 20 in a program I think a lot of people have their eyes on this season.
Xavier is a team that I think could really sneak up on some people. Make the second week of the NCAA tournament. Najee Marshall is a guy that just fills it up. He's able to shoot some threes. He's right around 6'8", 6'9", does a good job of distributing. He is terrific on the glass. And this whole Xavier team is. Tyreek Jones really fills it up for this bunch as well. You're not going to find a bunch of guys that are shooting like 40-plus percent from three with Xavier, but what I love about this team is that everyone just knows how to do their job. Scruggs and company. And you can tell that this team was turning the corner during the NIT last year under Travis Steele. And they seem to have taken those steps in the right direction once again this year.
Staying or going back to the SEC, what do you think about this Florida team generally? A little bit of a hiccup recently. Clearly talented. And Mike White, I think a lot of people expect him to make a run in the regular season as champions of the league. Do you think that's possible for Florida this season?
I do think so. We always see a couple of hiccups from teams. Heck, we saw Alabama a couple days ago wind up losing to the Quakers of Penn on opening night, and then they were able to bounce back very well against Florida Atlantic yesterday. So it is one of those situations where these losses do happen. I think the big thing for Florida is finding some three-point shooting. They just go not at water if they fell out of a boat against Florida State. Now, this is a team that, by and large, you're always going to play defense. Mike White is tremendous at that, and Kerry Blackshear does a great job of being able to clean up the glass, but the big thing is finding those guards like a Noah Locke that you can rely upon for threes because he was just absolutely awful in that game.
Kentucky, huge favorites tonight over Evansville. What are your thoughts generally on Kentucky at this point in the season? They're always one of the most talented teams, and I think they're going to run through most of their non-conference schedule with ease heading into conference play.
I do agree with you. I think that this is actually an interesting Evansville team as well because they've got a couple guys that started out as players at other D1 programs. Sam Cunnilife, you may recall that name. He is currently with Evansville. He actually began his career with Arizona State and Kansas, so he's got some really nice roots there. They bring in Atur Lefinowitz, who was a player for Coastal Carolina a few years ago, but let's face it, Kentucky's obviously going to win this game. Nate Sestina doing a great job of pulling in rebounds. He's a solid three-point shooter. Tyrese Maxey, we saw what he was able to do in the Champions Classic a couple of days ago. He's a very good three-point shooter. You combine that with a talented point guard in Ashton Haggins, who actually hasn't necessarily played his best basketball the first couple games. Mm-hmm. He's been a little bit inefficient with the ball, but you got to feel like he's going to get things rounded in form. You've got E.J. Montgomery and Nick Richards who are able to pull in rebounds. Kentucky's obviously going to roll. I don't know if they're going to roll to the tune of 25 points, which is a point spread in this game, but certainly Kentucky looking very good and worthy of being one of the top teams in the country.
At GUnit_81 on Twitter is where you can find Greg Peterson, and you'll want to do that as he is constantly letting you know and giving you great information on college basketball. Greg, probably the best or at least the most exciting matchup of the evening in my eyes, Oregon and Memphis. Oregon, a slight favorite. Your thoughts on these two teams?
Isn't this just the battle of opposites, Oregon, with all those guys that are juniors and seniors? Peyton Pritchard started in the 2016 Final Four. He has been there that long. He does just everything for Oregon. You bring in Anthony Mathias, a graduate transfer from New Mexico, shoots over 40% from three. Chris Durante was the top JUCO transfer, according to JUCOrecruiting.com this year. Shakar Justin, began his career with UNLV a few years ago. He was a JUCO transfer in the country. And then with Memphis, you've got five starting freshmen. You've got everything that's surrounding James Wiseman. But Wiseman, man, has he looked good so far this year, averaging over 10 rebounds per game. Guy's a shot-blocking machine. You've got Baugh at the point guard spot, doing a nice job of being able to facilitate. This is a game in which I do think the experience wins out. I think that Memphis is going to find itself a little bit more throughout the season. I think that they need a little bit more seasoning. And I think that Oregon, with having just so much experience in general, has a little bit of an upper hand in this one.
Greg Peterson knows his stuff. Greg, where can people hear you and find you? I've got one more question for you after this, so don't go anywhere.
Terrific. You can find me on Twitter, @GNR41. And I do a pair of podcasts. That's Gold with Steve Heitner. You may recall that name, Steve Heitner, because he was Kenny Banyan, Seinfeld, and then College Hoops Overtime Betting. You can find those on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn with That's Gold. We talk a little bit about sports betting, entertainment. It's a pretty much all-encompassing podcast. Meanwhile, with College Hoops Overtime Betting, this is for the diehards that love college basketball. I break down every game, every day, the betting angles, the normal just watching sports angles, you name it, it's in there.
Greg Peterson, the machine, as we like to call him, definitely has you covered for your college basketball insight. All right, Justin's at a press conference right now, Greg, but he did ask me to ask you your thoughts on the obscure Maryland Eastern Shore versus Longwood tonight. Let me have it.
Longwood has a player, and I kid you not, that is one of the best players out there in the conference by the name of Djibouti Phillips. Yes, Djibouti Phillips, a double-digit scorer for the Longwood Lancers. I don't know if you're going to find a better name out there in college basketball, but he does a great job. And then you've got another great name for Maryland Eastern Shore, A.J. Cheeseman. Last year, he averaged 9 points per game for a Maryland Eastern Shore team that, well, they were one of the worst teams in the country with regards to points per game. But, hey, they're coming off a game where they covered against Liberty. They were catching over 20 points. They held within 20. This is a squad that they're not doing very much on offense out there in the MEAC conference. But with Longwood, this is a program that I think is on a little bit of a come up. They wound up losing their top scorer towards the middle of the year last year. They were still able to make, I believe it was, the College Insiders Tournament. So I do have some expectations for Longwood. And this is obviously going to be a very, very ugly spread. And I'm going to be taking a look at points with Maryland Eastern Shore just because they don't score a lot of points, but they're actually decent on defense.
Folks, what else can I say? It's all there. If he knows that much about Maryland Eastern Shore and Longwood, I can assure you he can handle all the other games. Thanks, Greg. As always, appreciate your time and insight. I guess I didn't ask a prediction for tonight's game. Does Auburn win this one against South Alabama?
I think Auburn does win this one. I think it could wind up being a single-digit game, though. I think that this one might be a little bit of a sweat. I want to see how Javon McCormick comes out. He's had some less than stellar first halves. I remember that first half in the team's first game against Georgia Southern. Bounced back really strong in the second half. What I really want to see from Auburn is a full 40 minutes in this one, unlike the Georgia Southern game last week.
Man, Greg, appreciate it as always. Great stuff with Greg Peterson at @GUnit_81. We'll catch up with you soon, my friend.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
That's Greg Peterson, and man, his insight and his knowledge of all the games is impressive. Let's go back to the phone lines here. 321-1390. Always enjoy talking with Greg. Nice dude and a knowledgeable guy. Rob, your turn.
Hey, well, y'all are knowledgeable. You get great guests. That makes for a great show.
Thank you.
You have great callers, but you prepare. Like I like to say, y'all are like lawyers going to court. You're always ready, and no matter what the judge says, you got a response. And I like that talk about basketball. It's funny now how basketball, there is absolute commitment on behalf of the Auburn fan base, and there is from the Auburn athletic administration to winning in basketball. So if anybody ever says people in the South don't care about basketball, they're out of their minds. I live in Memphis. Trust me, basketball is huge. You just got to have a commitment. And that goes for any sport. If you're committed to winning, the fans will follow.
Yeah, Memphis actually has probably the most intriguing game tonight. Greg talked about that some. Oregon this evening, 13-ranked Memphis and Oregon, number 14 in the country, taking on one another. Yeah, the Auburn basketball program was just so pedestrian and so, underwhelming. It wasn't just average. It was bad for so long.
Yeah.
There was no culture around it. There was no excitement. And, you can say different things about different coaches, but Tony Barbee certainly, I don't think, made a ton of friends with administration or inroads with the fans. That was one of the first things Coach Pearl did, because I think he understood this is going to be a major overhaul. It's going to take years to get this program moved into the direction that he wanted to start what we're now seeing and what we've seen over the last 2 years, which is a very competitive team that's capable of making noise nationally and exciting a fan base. But before the winning came, there was an engagement with the fan base and making sure that they felt like they were a part of the Auburn basketball program. Now that they're successful, well, the hard part to some extent has been done, because people will follow a team that's winning, Rob.
Yeah, and another thing about Pearl that people in Auburn, I don't know if he's done it yet. I've been to several games, and the atmosphere is awesome. Student section, incredible. When Bruce Pearl was at Tennessee, two or three times a year, he would have his players, after the game was over at Thompson Bowling Arena in Knoxville, standing at the exits of the basketball arena, thanking the fans for showing up and supporting them. Now, look, that's powerful stuff. You know, I work with a lot of fundraising and a lot of organizations that I try to help raise money for in Memphis, and I got a friend of mine, he's been writing a check from, you know, for $20,000-$25,000 out of pocket to make this one event happen for the last 5 or 6 years. And I always make a point to go up and say, thank you so much, because I've known you since we were kids. You don't have to do this. I know a lot of people probably expect it or think you're supposed to do it, but thank you. And he grabbed me recently and gave me a hug, and he said, man, thank you. He goes, I don't know if you know how much that means to me. He goes, I said, you don't hear that a lot? He goes, no. He goes, you're right. People just expect it. Bruce Pearl gets it. Another thing he did, guys, when he first got the job at Auburn, he said, look, I'm not going to be a coach that gets up here on the podium and says, hey, when I get my players in here, things are really going to be good. He goes, hey, these are my players, guys right here, that are standing around us at this press conference. He set the tone right then that he was all about him and the family, and it fits perfectly with the Auburn culture. And I mean, my next point is, we got the Georgia game. I'll be down there. Got to go to Atlanta Thursday and Friday and be in Auburn for the game. But, folks, this is huge, okay? This is huge because Auburn won the decade of the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s in the Georgia series, winning at least 6 out of 10 every decade for that period. In this millennium, we are, oh, golly, Georgia is 13-7 against Auburn. We tied in 2000, we won. 2000, we won. But so Georgia's 13-7 because we played them in the rematch, obviously, in 2017. But the very best we could be, you know, 8-13 against Georgia in the last 20 years. But we've got to win, because if you listen to the national media right now, the narrative they're pushing, Alabama's already beaten Auburn. Y'all know that. I don't know if y'all knew it, but they've already said that their one quality win will be the win over Auburn. And Georgia, blah, blah, blah. We're just a stage prop in the national stage, and I will not stand for that. And our fan base better be ready to be raising hell like the battlefield at Falkirk in the great movie Braveheart, man. I mean, come on. Who are we? We need our William Wallace to rally the fans before this game. And if any of our fans are going there wanting us to lose because they want to get rid of Gus or something like that, they can all go straight to you-know-where, either for Auburn or we don't need you. War damn.
As always, appreciate the call, Rob. Let's now go to Brian. Thanks, Rob. Brian, your turn.
Man, that's hard to follow that up.
Passion, always.
Yeah. I was reading a article the other day that had mentioned Auburn's only wins against Georgia have been at home with a top-ranked Auburn team. Now, a lot of people don't consider number 13 to be top-ranked, but considering our losses and freshman quarterback and our position with coaching and different things like that, I'm okay with that, and I will consider Auburn to be a top-ranked. I think Georgia better watch out. I think we're probably going to open up the run, try to at least. I think DJ Williams is going to run over some linebackers like he likes to do so much, which I thoroughly enjoy watching. And hopefully Bo Nix doesn't overthrow too many of those screens and the slants, because if Seth Williams gets loose in the open field or Anthony Schwartz, we could blow this game wide open. I mean, we saw them struggle with South Carolina. So all we got to do is emulate that exact game plan, and it might be a big day for Auburn.
Very possibly. These two teams have some similarities, as we've pointed out, at least broadly when you talk about playmakers on both sides of the ball. Certainly an ability with the talent, you would think, to score some points, but haven't done so consistently against their best opponents. Both teams losing some close games, although I would argue Auburn's, you know, coming against LSU and Florida, whereas Georgia beat Florida. You can go round and round about this. I think Auburn will win both these games in November. It's going to be a good month for the Tigers. Brian, anything else you want to add? Coach Malzahn said today at his press conference, they're not thinking about the 2017 season, but it's also not necessary because a lot of the players that were a part of that team are still here and knew what it took to beat both those teams in November.
The only thing that I could really wish for is for me to be inside that locker room on game day. I remember, high school, obviously that's not as big as what we're doing now, but we had our rival Pike County, and man, we hated them boys. And every time we played them, the locker room, the tension was so thick, just from excitement, and every emotion you could possibly think of was going through our heads within a matter of seconds. And it was an unbelievable feeling. I can't imagine what it would be like inside the Auburn locker room going into this game. And so that's really the only thing I could wish for, is to be there and see what they're going through.
Yeah, some good points, Brian, and we appreciate it as always. There's a part of the fan base, and it's not just Auburn that's been impacted by this, but there's a sense that if you're not in the playoff, well, the season is sort of a wash. I think that's far from the truth. Auburn here in a great position to finish at least second in their division. That doesn't sound very sexy. No one really cares about second place. However, if you are second behind the top-ranked or one of the top-ranked teams and you beat your rivals Georgia and Alabama, you're headed for New Year's Six Bowl, and with enough chaos, I suppose it is possible Auburn could find themselves in the playoffs, but I wouldn't count on it. They would need a lot of help. But a big difference here if Auburn can just win one of the two, and goodness, the narrative totally changes from the last 6 weeks or so where Auburn suffered two close losses on the road if they close out the year with wins over their biggest rivals. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, guys. 321-1390 is how you can join us. You can also follow along at ESPN 106.7. When we come back, we will have Gus Malzahn's press conference for you. Stay tuned. This is The Lunch Break.
Like us on Facebook at ESPN 106.7.
As we continue on, appreciate Greg Peterson joining us to start off hour two. We transition back into Auburn football as they gear up for a huge matchup. In terms of consequences and the future and how the fan base feels at this point of the season, and it's always a huge part with the teams, Georgia and Alabama, both of which are usually in contention for the college football playoff. There's no secret that this can totally change the perception of a season, and Auburn will have that opportunity this Saturday when they take on Georgia. Here's Gus Malzahn as he wrapped up from his time at the podium just a few minutes ago.
Okay, Georgia week, very exciting around here right now. When you look at them, we're playing one of the most talented teams in the entire country. And I think the good thing for us is we've already played three top 10 teams, so it's not going to be a shock to our system as far as that goes. And then I think another big factor is we're playing at home, and we're very excited about that. I know our players are too, and can't wait to get in front of our fans in this game. You look at him offensively, it starts with Jake Fromm. I really feel like he's one of the better players at any position in all of college football. You look at his career, he's been very consistent. He's a tough guy. It really starts with him. A very, very talented offensive line, very talented running backs. They're one of the top offenses statistically in our league. You look at them defensively, they have the number one defense in our league right now. And you watch them on film and you can tell that. Play a lot of defensive linemen. They rotate in and out. There's really not much drop off. They got great depth there. Their linebackers are very active, and they got some secondary that their safeties are very experienced, and they got corners that can really run. And I think they've not given up a rushing touchdown up to this point. And I don't think that's happened in the last 20 years. So that tells you a little bit about their defense. But overall, like I said, a very, very talented team. But we're really looking forward to playing these guys, and our coaches and our players are extremely excited. Questions? Okay. That's good. Anything else?
You just spoke with Coach Hiley Jake from no secret, he's averaging over 150 passing yards per game. How do you limit his role in the pass game?
Well, you gotta make him uncomfortable. You know, he's got a very good command of his offense. He doesn't hold the ball long. He knows where to go with it. He can throw the ball away. And when he has to, he can be a running threat too. You know, I just think he's a complete guy. Of course, we played him numerous times. He played right out here 2 years ago as a true freshman, showed a lot of toughness. And, you know, he's, like I said, he's one of the best. That's what I believe.
You played against a lot of Georgia defenses. How does this one rank compared to the other ones?
They're always going to be pretty good on defense. There's no doubt about that. But this is, statistically, I mean, they're doing things that hadn't been done in 20 years. So that tells you a lot. You know, you're really, until you actually play someone, you can actually answer that question a little bit better. But just looking at them on film and, you know, what they've done, it's been very impressive, you know, to watch. I will tell you this, they are pressuring a little bit more than they have in the past. So we do expect them to blitz and continue that trend.
You mentioned how they haven't given up a rushing touchdown this season. What's going to be the key for you guys to get some sort of running game going against the team that's been that tough?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the challenge everybody that plays them. I mean, you've got to be able to run the football effectively, and you can't be one-dimensional. And, you know, for us to be successful, we're going to have to run the football effectively. And so, I mean, that's really how we're built anyway. So that'll be a really good matchup to watch and to see what happens.
Because you've been good on off weeks in your career, mm-hmm. This is a big one. You're going into a very big game here. Is there a tendency to kind of want to overthink it a little bit and just kind of get too cute with it maybe?
Too cute?
Yeah.
I don't know. I will tell you this. It's a lot better to have an extra week regardless. You know, it gives you a chance. And then, like I've said before, you know, from our standpoint, to heal up, which I think we're going to be pretty healthy coming this thing, which this late in the season I think is good. A chance to get better on your own about stuff. And then you get a chance to look at them a little bit deeper. And of course, we know them pretty well anyway. But like I said, they're a little bit different than they were last year defensively, just from a pressure standpoint. But, you know, especially when you got a young quarterback, I think it even helps that much more to have an extra week. And, you know, so it's good. I don't know about getting cute. We'll see how the game goes, and you can answer that for me probably after the game and see what you think.
Coach Collins very effective about not turning the ball over, only 3 interceptions all season thus far. How do you talk to your team about winning the turnover battle?
Yeah, you know, I think that'll be a big factor. I mean, if you really look at this game, I mean, you're looking at two of the better defenses in our league and in the country. And, you know, they got a great defense. We know that. And the quarterback, just like you said, he's a veteran guy. He's played in big games, and he doesn't turn the ball over a lot. But we got to make him uncomfortable. But the good thing is we got a very talented defense too. And so I know they're looking forward to the challenge facing this group. You know, their offense, and they've got weapons too. You know, at the receiver position, they've got guys that can make plays. But I really think it starts with the quarterback and, you know, trying to make him uncomfortable.
This situation isn't all that different from what y'all had 2 years ago. Is that something you spent some time talking about in 2017?
No, we really hadn't talked about 2017. Now, here's the good thing for us is there's a lot of our players that'll be on the field Saturday that were there. Now, the thing about it, they played a bunch of young guys back then too, and so they have a lot of guys that have experience too, you know, as far as that goes. But, you know, I think for us, like I said, I mean, we're playing at home. And this is a rival game, and I mean, we're really looking forward to it. I mean, this is a great opportunity for us, and that's how we're looking. And it feels different around here. Of course, every time you play Georgia, it always feels different. It's one of our rivals. They happen to be one of the top teams in the country, just like they were a couple years ago. And we're in probably a similar situation as we were a couple years ago, too. So we'll see what happens.
For each team's legacy is how you finish these last two SEC games, or how a team's kind of regarded.
Yeah, I mean, part of being at Auburn. I mean, the way this schedule sets up, we're going to play them and our other rival here at the end. I mean, next year that'll change, but, you know, it's been that way ever since I've been here. I mean, this is the games people remember, and our players understand that. I mean, our players understand that. They understand how big it is, and they've been looking forward to this one for a long time. I have too. I know our fans have, so we get it. But at the same time, man, we're excited. This could be a good one. Yeah, I mean, these are the two games you look forward to, and really two games. I want to go back to this game, and I'll go with that. But this is what you look forward to, and like I said, these are the games people remember, and they're very important to us and our fan base. And like I said, it's good.
Earlier in the season, you said those last two losses to LSU were still fresh to you guys the way those ended. Is it the same with Georgia, the way you kind of ended last year, and then both of that big field goal of 17?
It's big regardless. I mean, it's big regardless. I mean, you don't really get into, I know that's probably good for y'all to think about, but it's big regardless of what happened last year and all this. It's a rivalry game, and it's good as it gets. So.
Yes, you've been scored a lot of points against them here. Really struggled to score against them away from here.
Yeah.
Obviously the noise and that stuff, but what's the big difference in
well, I think one of it is we got a great home field advantage with our fans and just the comfort that we have. And kind of like we talked about Sunday, you know, our quarterback's a young guy. He's played better at home, and I think this year that sets well for us. I mean, offensively, we got a huge challenge against our defense, no matter whether you're playing in the parking lot or playing out here or there. But, you know, We've got a great home field advantage, and I think that has a lot to do with it, not just offensively, but everything.
Some of the offensive players have said that they know the defense is going to show up. Does that create a pressure for the offense to match up?
You know, we're a team. We're a team, and that's the way we go into each game. And you know, we need to play well in all three phases, and you know, our guys understand that.
You mentioned earlier about Georgia's pass defense, really fast cornerbacks, their safeties being a lot of speed. What kind of challenges do you think those guys kind of pose to your passing game, especially about?
Yeah, you know, I think the big thing is when they're able to stop the run, then, you know, they can play a little deeper and keep everything in front of them. And they've been able to do that all year. So, you know, you've got to be effective running the football to keep them from that. And their safeties are very good tacklers. They're veteran guys. They played a lot of football. And then their corners, they can all really, really run. And so, you know, I think that's just to make it really simple. You've got to be able to run the football good enough to make them play honest. And if you can't do that, that's when they can really stay back there deep, keep everything in front of them, and keep away from the big plays. You know, I mean, when we're at our best, we're able to run the football and we got explosive plays. It doesn't matter if we're playing them or playing somebody else. That's what we need to do. Now, that's a challenge against this group, but it's a challenge we're looking forward to.
Coach, you talked about it being a rivalry game, but does the opportunity to play spoiler for their college football playoff hopes add anything to this?
You know, we have a lot to play for here. You know, that's what we're worried about. We're not worried about them. We're worried about us. And if things turn out good like they did a couple years ago, I mean, we got some really good things ahead of us. So that's the way we're looking at it.
Gus, the Arkansas job is open. You're obviously an Arkansas guy, coach there, played there as Malzahn. How committed are you to getting done, you know, what you want to do here, staying here, doing the things you
do? Yeah, I mean, I love Auburn. Like I've said in the past, I love my players. We got a bright future here, and nothing's changed.
There's Gus Malzahn. He finished up just a little while ago. Derrick Brown, Bo Nix took the podium. We'll talk about that more. We've got a little bit of audio from Kirby Smart, who was in front of the media earlier this week. This is an interesting matchup. Coach Malzahn saying he wants to run the ball. You know, has mentioned how good Georgia's been at stopping the run, but that being one-dimensional against this defense will almost certainly spell a loss for Auburn. So we will take your calls, and we will finish out today's edition of The Lunch Break in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. This is ESPN 106.7.
Listen to The Lunch Break on the Abby Award-winning ESPN 106.7 app.
A few minutes remaining in today's edition of the show. We've got a friend of the program on the line. That would be Jake Wright. Michael, you asked for some trivia, so I'll give you some. What is the only sea on Earth with no coastline? What is the only sea on Earth with no coastline? Jake, you are welcome to answer. If you know, don't Google it, you cheater.
I have no idea what the answer is.
Michael, do you have any idea what the only sea on Earth with no coastline would be?
The Arctic Sea.
That is fine, but not correct. Sargasso, the Sargasso Sea. I think that's a pretty tough question.
Where
right?
is that?
I don't know. Throw that a Google search down if you would. Hey, Jake, what's up, dude?
I forgot to call yesterday. I got lucky and remembered today.
Good. You had some opinions that you really had to share. So go ahead and lay that out for us.
Yeah, I think, and I know that it's been a tough circumstance with South Carolina and Muschamp, but they've got to get rid of him, don't they? You can't go 4-8 in your fourth year as a head coach in the SEC with what people thought coming into the year was going to be your best team. And I understand the schedule's been tough, and they've got a quarterback that's a freshman, but that's still, they got to get rid of him. And
yeah, Jake, in a different way, they've got a similar situation, I think, to Auburn. I mean, they're, you know, the ceiling not, I mean, they're dealing with what could be disastrous, although they did have a win against Georgia. I hear you, though, like, the feeling is, can they do better? And Muschamp certainly has a great reputation as a coordinator. It didn't work out at Florida. South Carolina, an even more difficult job than Florida. You know, while Muschamp certainly got a lot of name recognition, a lot of people know who he is because of where he's coached and the success he's had as a coordinator. When you look at the results, it's not been pretty, and I'm not sure it's getting better.
Well, the thing is, if they don't beat Georgia this year, they're likely 3-9. And, I mean, that's just not going to cut it at pretty much any SEC school, including Vanderbilt. Because, I mean, you know, Vanderbilt's had some success with two bowl games under Derek Mason. And I just think that he's had it more than enough time. And if you look at it, they got LSU as their cross next year. So next year's not going to be much better because they still have Clemson. They still have Georgia, Florida, LSU. So, you know, it's time to reset, I think.
Yeah, and this is an interesting and a layered conversation because they did lose their senior quarterback at the very beginning of the season. He was, of course, there have been a lot of high expectations for Bentley over the last two seasons, and for a number of reasons, it has not worked out. The injury, of course, the reason why this year, something he couldn't control. It will be fascinating to see what direction they go. The expectation at South Carolina wasn't super high. Josh Kendall, who covers South Carolina for The Athletic, told us at SEC Media Days, just getting to 7 wins, while that would be, of course, displeasing to the fan base, would be enough for the administrators. They're not going to get there, so it's kind of going to be curious. Like, I'm fascinated to see if it's good enough. What else is on your mind today, Jake?
That's about it. I don't know why I'm bringing the hammer down on some coaches today, but I've been saying this for a while too. I think it's time Michigan State needs to go another direction as well. I understand that the situation there, but that's what I was telling you the other day when I told you I had some strong opinions. I mean, it's bad up there, and with everything off the field and Illinois coming back from a 20-plus point deficit. I mean, that's not good. D'Antonio, he's toward the end of his run there.
Yeah, and you know that's a tough one too because they've had so much success with him. It starts. I think you know there's a lot of appreciation and you're glad that he managed to make that a relative competitive team, not just within their own division or conference, but nationally. But they've had some bad seasons recently. And we're able to bounce back from one of them. I don't know if he'll get the opportunity to bounce back this time. Jake, how's the weather? It's finally getting very cold here. Not just it's going to be in the 30s later this evening, but you guys have been there for a couple of weeks now.
Well, it snowed every week here since the beginning of October, and it actually hit yesterday like -1 at some point in time. A couple times, actually, I think. I didn't think it was that cold, but then I walked outside and was like, oh, man, this really is not fun.
When you come back to Auburn, are you going to tell everybody that it's not that cold? Are you going to be that guy? Are you going to wear shorts everywhere?
No, it was brutal. But I am getting some relief. I'm making the voyage to Auburn this weekend, so we'll see how that goes.
Be safe and be well. Thanks for calling.
See you later. Thanks.
Your thoughts on South Carolina? I think that's a good point. I don't know. You know, the expectation from the administrators wasn't that he needed to have a stellar season, but I think that they wanted to avoid this.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. They have one of the toughest schedules in the country.
You lose your quarterback.
Obviously, yeah, you're, what, fifth or ninth year quarterback.
It does feel like that, right? He's got a lot of experience and threw for a lot of touchdowns last year, but also threw a lot of interceptions last year. And so they were hopeful he'd be better protecting the football. And he just, after that first game, there's nothing you can do.
And Helinski's actually played pretty well. So it's tough for him. But, I mean, losses at Tennessee, you know, against North Carolina in the first game, and we were talking about how important that game was for bowl eligibility for South Carolina before the season, but being competitive against Alabama, beating Georgia, I mean, these are things that, you know, really weren't expected of South Carolina this season, and it has been a super up-and-down season. They're going to have a guy get drafted in the first round. Helinski looks like the future. It's I don't know what they're going to do about Will Muschamp. I think he survives, just based on the strength of schedule that they've got and everything. But next year is definitely going to be a big year with how good Florida seems to be and how good – I mean, Tennessee has really turned their program around since they went 0-2 to start the year with losses to Georgia State and BYU. So teams in the East are trending up outside of Vanderbilt, and we don't know what South Carolina is. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Appreciate the calls. We'll get to our final break and come back with what's on the night. You're listening to The Lunch Break.
Listen to The Lunch Break on your smartphone or tablet with the free ESPN 106.7 app.
Just a few minutes remaining in today's show, Michael. A deficiency of what vitamin may lead to dry eyes and night blindness? A deficiency of what vitamin may lead to dry eyes and night blindness?
Iron. Wait, is it a letter?
It is a letter.
B.
Close. Vitamin A.
Dang.
Not easy. Not easy. All right, we're going to play a little bit, a brief snippet of Kirby Smart, some of his comments on what he expects the Bulldogs to face when Auburn hosts them this Saturday.
You know, we move on to Auburn. Tremendous program, tremendous football team. You know, they got two really tough losses in which they played two really good football teams and played them right down to the wire. But they've got a tremendous program. Gus has done a great job. He's playing with a freshman quarterback who I think is going to be a really talented player in this league for a long time. He's been in some really tough games already and he's played really well. And you look across the board, opening with Oregon, who's one of the best teams in the country, to beat those guys and be a true freshman and go out there and do that, it's really hard to do. Their defense speaks for itself. They've got a ton of guys that are going to be drafted on it. They got guys that seem like they have played in our conference for 10 years. And it seems that we played against that defensive group a lot because all those guys seem like they started as freshmen from the secondary to the front. So they've done a great job. Coach Steele does a great job with their defense. They play really hard. And they've got a really good football team. So we've got a huge challenge this week, and especially coming off the physical game we just had, it'll be a challenge this week to, you know, get our guys prepared, healed up, and ready to go against a really tough football team in a tough environment to play in on the road at Auburn. But that's what the SEC is about, and that's the next game up for us.
Kirby, a lot of people have been looking forward to watching your offensive line go up against their defensive front. How much do blocking schemes and strategies change from week to week? I mean, without giving too much away, 2 weeks ago we were asking you about Bernard and Zuniga and how to stop them, and obviously you've touched on Auburn's front. How does it change from week to week when you talk about those kind of strategies, and is it different this week compared to maybe Florida a couple weeks ago?
Well, I mean, the matchups are different every week. The schemes are not extravagant or a lot different. I mean, every offense, you know, has a different way to present a play, but they block the play the same way. I mean, Gus's offense, they're going to run certain plays, but they're going to have a different presentation to try to window dress it and make the different picture the same way our guys will do. So the matchups change. The schemes don't change a lot. They got really physical players up front. They strike blockers well. They play really hard, and they rotate a lot of guys that play in there. They've proven that by how they played some really good offenses.
Coach, I think you said in the past something effect of surviving the first quarter against Gus until you figure out what he does. What does he do that's so different that makes him a tough matchup? I know you said something about window dressing and formations, but is it really that different than other offenses?
Yeah, I mean, it's very different. They do a good job of changing things up. You throw in the tempo with it. You throw in some of the most elite speed guys in the country on the perimeter, and what you get a recipe for is potential big plays, and they do a good job of attacking your perimeter and your edges. I mean, he has the ability to get on the perimeter with every play, but also pound you and grind you. You know, a lot of teams aren't committed to the run, and they don't run gap scheme plays, and they don't run things like that, where these guys are not, you know, they have all the runs. They have a little bit of this, a little bit of this, a little bit of this, but in every one of them, they got the ability to get the ball on the perimeter. So they've got players to get it on the perimeter with, so he does a good job changing that up.
Yeah, Gus Malzahn, earlier we played audio from his press conference. He talked about the desire to run the ball. Kirby obviously concerned with that ability and with that, what he, I would imagine, expects from Coach Malzahn. The other thing, unsurprisingly, the defensive front, which he joked, it feels like those guys have been around for a decade, and he mentioned some of those guys playing since they were freshmen. Michael, we don't have a ton of time left. I've enjoyed hanging out with you today. Let's finish strong with what's on tonight.
Time now for What's On Tonight.
All right, we will start in the NBA at 6 p.m. It's a doubleheader on NBA TV at 6 p.m. The Cleveland Cavaliers travel to Philly to take on the 76ers.
Okay.
And at 9 p.m., the Trailblazers go to New York to take up, not New York, that doesn't say Knicks, that says Kings. They're going to Sacramento.
Okay. Staying out west.
Yep. NCAA football tonight. Ooh. It's Maction, baby.
That time of the year.
At 5 p.m. on ESPN News, we have Eastern Michigan and Akron. And I wrote down 5:30 p.m. on ESPN News, so that doesn't make a lot of sense. Western Michigan is playing Ohio. NCAA basketball, 7 p.m. on ESPN Plus, Auburn at South Alabama. 6 p.m. on SEC Network, Evansville is traveling to Kentucky to take on Kentucky.
Greg said he didn't like that 25 points, even though Kentucky's way really? Better. Greg's saying I don't think he plans to take he doesn't think Kentucky's going to cover. That's a big point spread. All right.
6 p.m. on CBS, Mizzou goes to take on Xavier. That is a big out-of-conference game for Missouri right there. Xavier, a very good basketball team year in and year out. And at 8 p.m. on ESPN, I mean, got to be the game of the night. Number 13, Memphis,
yep,
at number 14, Oregon. Memphis obviously going through some eligibility things with James Wiseman. I believe he's playing still. I don't really know that situation. And then in the NHL at 6:30 p.m. on NBC Sports Network, Penguins. Painter, your favorite team, the Penguins.
That's right. Couple of wins they've reeled off in a row, two in a row.
They travel to New York to take on the New York Rangers.
All right. They just played the Islanders.
Movie pick tonight, 5 p.m. on Cartoon Network. It is Lego Batman. The
wow.
Lego Batman movie is incredible if you haven't watched it.
Haven't seen it. Only seen the, I guess, have they made two plus the Batman version?
Yes.
So there's at least three.
There's one more.
I think
the
I've seen
Ninjago.
I've seen one and two of the Lego movie. I've not seen the Batman Lego movie.
It's great. It's really very good.
Who plays the voice for that?
Will Arnett.
Okay, yes.
He does a good job. I really, really like that movie. It makes me laugh a lot, not going to lie. The Dan Peck Memorial HBO pick tonight.
R.I.P. Dan, we love you.
It is the TV series Watchmen. If you're not all caught up, I'm not. Episode 4 aired this weekend. I got to watch episode 4. Maybe that'll happen tonight. But it's very good show through 3 weeks. I really like it. It's getting really, really good reviews. Pretty confusing, but
seems
really
like
awesome world building.
Seems like it could be dark.
It is dark.
A very dark film
it
or
dark.
Show.
It's a lot of It's fun. It's a very good show. I enjoy it a lot. It's getting really good reviews, like I said. So, really good show. Go watch it if you haven't. And then 10 p.m. tonight, HGTV House Hunters International is in Quito, Ecuador.
I've been there.
Really?
Yeah, the capital. Been to Ecuador twice. And nice folks.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. They were nice to Painter.
Oh, well, maybe you're special. I don't know.
I don't think so. I think they were nice to everybody. Michael, you're at Couch Paptato. You're with Zach.
Yes, I am.
On the Locked On Auburn podcast.
Not every day, but a lot of days.
Most of the time. Thanks for hanging out with me. I know it's a busy day for you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really love coming on the show.
He's out at Couch Paptato. Justin Ferguson back tomorrow. We'll recap that Auburn-South Alabama game. Talk more about Auburn and Georgia. Big week of sports here in Auburn, Alabama. All right. We'll try to be better next time. Until then, keep it toasty.